You're rocking with the voice of Town View. We put our spin on trending topics and school news. Thought provoking, insightful, we speak the truth. We do it for all ages, not just for the youth. Listen close, you might learn something. Or laugh so hard, you split your side of something. Live stream a podcast. Whenever you tune in, it's sure to be a blast. Let's be honest, you don't wanna miss that. Content so real, you gonna wanna run it back. We keep you entertained while making an impact. Want forum and announcements? Well, this is not that. Sports, pop, culture, political. Whatever you like, we got you covered, bro. It's a movement, more than just a show. It's KSBM Radio.
Come closer to the music.
Broadcasting live from Marvin E. Robinson School of Business and Management, Dallas, Texas.
My radio station.
We are KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview.
Hello and welcome to KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview. I'm your host, Emilia, and joining me are my fellow hosts,
Terrence,
Dior,
and Jamal.
And today, we're privileged to welcome a distinguished guest to our show. Our guest holds an esteemed position as Chief Operating Officer and General Manager at the American Airlines Center at Dallas, Texas. And it's an honor to introduce a leader in sports entertainment venue management, and it's none other than Mr. Dave Brown. We're very happy to have you today.
Thank you.
And he has had a career over three decades, and Mr. Brown's relentless dedication and groundbreaking innovations have solidified his status as an industry leader.
From overseeing the development of the American Airlines Center through skillfully navigating the ever-evolving landscape of sports and entertainment, we invite you to join us as we embark the captivating journey through his remarkable career. We'll uncover the triumphs and trials that propel Mr. Brown forward. Welcome, Mr. Brown. It's an honor to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Jamal. It's an honor to be here.
Is there anything you'd like to share with our viewers before we begin?
Yeah, I would. And I just want to thank you for the invitation, for stepping up. We work together at American Airlines Center, have for the last couple years, and appreciate you thinking of me to participate today. It's an honor and privilege for me to be here. And I'd just like to share one of the reasons it's such an honor is that I had a personal relationship with Marvin Robinson that goes back to, I think, 1988 at Reunion Arena, which is the arena that was hosting the Mavericks. The Stars weren't even in town yet, but hosted the Mavericks and was the primary arena facility for the city of Dallas back in that day. And we entered into a business partnership with Marvin Robinson. He was a very prolific entrepreneur. And had a very vast portfolio of hospitality businesses that he operated. And we felt like he would be a great addition to our hospitality team, providing some food and beverage operations at Reunion Arena. So I got to know Marvin through that relationship, but he became a friend and a mentor I just cherished the opportunity to have known him and worked with him.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And on to our first question. Reflecting on your upbringing, what significant experiences have influenced your journey to where you are today?
Well, I think the probably one of the most, one of the turning points for me as a youngster was my father passed away when I was seven left myself and two sisters under the care of my mom. And just seeing her step up, single mom, she didn't have an education past high school. So she had limited opportunities to take care of the family, but she did her best. She went back to school. She trusted us to the care of some of her family and other friends when she couldn't be there for us. But she was always my primary role model because of the way she took on those responsibilities of parenting and guiding us down. Both my sisters went to college, graduated. One became an RN, and the other sister was very successful in pharmaceutical sales. So that was the guiding light, I guess, in my early years, and very thankful for everything she taught me.
So moving forward a little further, what high school did you attend, and what accomplishments are you most proud of?
High school, I was a product of Houston Independent Schools. The school I went to, it's called Margaret Wisdom High School. It's named after Miss Wisdom, who was a very well-known journalism teacher. I never took one of her classes, and I regret it. The school wasn't named for her at that time, but was later in later years named after her. But it was a solid high school. You know, there were some outstanding teachers, and they influenced me for sure. You know, a few stand out. My Spanish teacher was a hoot. I remember that. I don't remember much Spanish, but I still try. There were some business and government teachers that influenced me, and I think led me on a path to studying business at Texas A&M after high school.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really interesting. And I would like to add on to what you said about high school. Did you have any mentors in high school or in college that influenced your decision or your journey in your career path?
I did. I took my first job when I was 13 years old, and that was, you know, getting a paycheck, working. I worked at a ice cream shop, and I was just enamored with the manager. Okay. And he actually was the manager and the owner, and he was quite a character. Didn't pay me much, but I learned a lot. If you're 13, you don't need much money, right? Got all the ice cream I could eat. That was a bonus.
That was the best part.
It was the best part. but he taught me about efficiencies. Mm-hmm. For instance, he would send me to go buy toilet paper at the store next door, mm-hmm. and I'd come back with the fluffiest Charmin that they sold. Yeah. And he'd send me back and say, no, you go back and you get a single ply from the bottom shelf. Mm-hmm. And I'd take the Charmin back, and it would be, you know, a dollar cheaper for the less expensive toilet paper. And he was a little overboard, but he did, you know, 13 years old, learning about those kind of, you know, certain things cost more because they're a premium item and they have premium quality attached to them. But his name was Mr. Green. And mm-hmm. Of course, I'm Mr. Brown, but that's a little strange. I've worked since I was 13, either in retail or, primarily retail till I got out of college. But I worked at a grocery store, I worked at a sporting goods store, two sporting goods stores. I was always customer facing, you know, kind of helping customers buy products or services. I just was always enamored by the managers that I worked for, and I always looked up to them. I just thought they were so cool because they hired people, they fired mm-hmm. people, and they managed budgets, and they counted the money, and they got the money to the bank. And I just thought, you know, this is business. This is, you know, I'm seeing and being a part of a functional business that is, making money, and I. You know, growing up in a kind of a meager household, making money and having money was something that I aspired to. So I always looked up to my managers I worked for through high school.
Mm-hmm. So I would like to ask about Mr. Green. I think that was his name.
Yes.
So do you think that his influence on you being more efficient with your money helped you to become more interested in becoming a general manager later on?
I think it was a starting point. Yeah, again, I was only 13, and I mowed yards or did a few odds ends. I mean, but getting a paycheck and even though my checks were maybe $20, $30 a week, it was just having money and after never having it, you really valued it. Mm-hmm. And I was smart enough to open a savings account. I was 13 years old, and I'd take $5, $10, and I'd put it away, and it paid off. You know, when I went to college, I had to pay for my own college, so I had a little bit of money, and I got some government assistance because of our economic situation. Certainly, I learned lessons from all the managers I worked for: Mr. Green, Mr. Moody. Who else was there? There's one I'm missing, but. My high school work experiences were invaluable to me.
Mm-hmm. So How did your educational journey from high school and to college influence your career path, particularly in your decision to study business and management at Texas A&M University?
Well, I knew I wanted to go to college. My older sister, who's 5 years older, went to college, and then she was out by then making really good money, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to need a degree to accomplish that goal. And I applied to the schools that my friends were applying to, really. University of Houston, where I lived, University of Texas was a popular school for a lot of my friends that I hung around with, and Texas A&M was the third. So I applied for all three schools and was accepted by all three. And I started doing campus visits, and really I wanted to get away from home, but not too far, and I think that's the primary reason I landed at Texas A&M. It was only 90 minutes from my mom's house, and I knew I'd be wanting to get back and see her quite often and for her to come visit me. It just felt right. I really just felt like A&M was the right place for me. It was a lot more laid back at the time than the University of Texas. It was a small town campus. Everybody was friendly. Everybody said howdy. It's a big deal there.
How and, stereotypical.
Yeah.
Texas.
And it just drew me in. And it provided me a little more, I think, a little more structure than I think the other two schools, and they're fantastic schools, and you can't go wrong going to either one of those schools. But the culture at A&M, I think, was right for me, and I absorbed it and benefited from that education for a long time now.
So all of these were from your college visits that you went? Did you visit Texas A&M?
Yeah, well, I went to A&M. I was familiar with the University of Texas and University of Houston. Mm-hmm. I just, if you ever visit those cities, you're going to see the campus.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd never been on the campus at A&M until I went for my visit.
So you would recommend students to go visit the campuses they're interested in?
If that's the, if you're going to go, I think, to a destination, college where you're going to be in that town on that campus, I think that would be critical to do. Just make sure you're comfortable with the journey, the trip back and forth, the setting, the surrounding, the climate. Some people pick their college based on climate. Mm-hmm. It's on the beach. It's mm-hmm. it's in the mountains. It's somewhere I want to be hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
I would advise it, and I think once you do that, these decisions sometimes have to come down to your intuition and what feels right, mm-hmm. and where you feel comfortable in seeing mm-hmm. yourself as you pursue your education, educational goals. I would certainly advise that.
So you mentioned that you saw that your sister was making good money after she graduated college. Was there ever this kind of competitiveness that you wanted to like just get like beat her at whatever you were?
No, I it's a great question, Maul. But I didn't have that competitive. I just saw my older sister being successful, and I was very happy for her, very proud. Now, when my smaller sister saw both of us getting through school and making money, she got super competitive.
Oh.
And she really did well, better than we did.
Oh, so,
oh wow. Is it safe to say that she makes more money?
She made so much more money, she's already retired. So, yes.
I'm trying to be like her.
Pharmaceutical sales. That's one way to go.
Mm.
And that's where she was very successful. I became competitive after school in terms of money when I was interviewing for jobs post A&M, and all my buddies that had graduated from the business school there went out and started looking for employment. Most went into you know, accounting firms or banking firms or you know, financial institutions of some sort in their training programs. And I wanted, I didn't want to be a manager trainee. I wanted to manage. I wanted to hit the ground running. In doing so, I made more money than they did day one. I probably overstepped my abilities, but I went to work for a company in property management that was based in Cleveland, but they had an office in Houston, and Houston was really, really growing quickly at the time. A lot of big office buildings opening, and the company I worked for serviced those buildings and the type of different services like housekeeping, food and beverage, parking, all the things a big building you don't think about. You know, there's a bunch of attorneys there in that building, or bankers, or what have you, but there's going to be, you know, food service areas. There's going to be a parking garage attached to it. There's going to be housekeeping duties. And the company I work for was engaged in those operations. So I took a job 2 weeks out of school with that company, and they basically said, here are the office buildings you're going to service. Here are your numbers, your profit and loss responsibilities, your employees, and go get them. Mm-hmm. And there was no training. It was just go manage. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I had all the management jobs, not only through high school, but I worked at a gas station in college. I worked at a restaurant in college. I worked all the way through college. So I kind of knew a little bit about, you know, scheduling and hiring. And you know, I was the person being scheduled and being hired and being trained and, But that's really what I'd always thought. I wanted to manage. I wanted to be a manager, and here you go. I was 22 years old and had a lot of responsibility.
So, touching more on your experience at Texas A&M University, what pivotal moments from your college years provided valuable insights for your future endeavors?
Once I almost flunked out. And I'm not real proud of that, but I was distracted, and a lot of kids do when they go to school and they start having fun, too much fun. And I went on scholastic probation, I think, in my sophomore year, and when they say if you don't make your grades, you're going to get kicked out of school, and something that you love and cherish, it may be taken away from you. You get it in gear. So I never made less than a 3.5 GPA per semester after that. So that was a pivotal point, learning that it's not all fun and games. You can't just cruise. I mean, I cruised through high school. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say that, but it was kind of easy. College was a different thing, and you can't just, you know, walk into the calculus test and, you know, try and remember a bunch of formulas, you know, 5 minutes before. You got to work. You got to practice. You got to study. And I had to learn how to study and focus and commit to it. So that was a pivotal point. Then I had some teachers along the way that I looked up to. They were cool people that taught me a lot of things that I would not have otherwise had learned just by their knowledge and experience and things they shared with us as students. Mm-hmm.
So I would like to learn more about your first job out of college. And you said you were a manager. You had a variety of jobs. Mm-hmm. So what key lessons did you learn from those jobs that helped you manage all the big responsibilities that you got from your job at 22 years old?
I learned that look for opportunities that are challenges and that are going to make you stand out. And sometimes those are things that you may not want to engage in. You know, one of the areas that my company was doing, you know, part of the services we provided to these buildings was janitorial. So I didn't know anything about, you know, janitorial supplies, chemicals, standards, height, you know, sanitation. Those are things that I had to learn, and I had to get out and mop floors, and I had to get out and pick up trash and empty trash cans and do the jobs that I was asking other people to do. in order to learn about what that was all about. I volunteered for, different buildings that had different challenges that were not real pretty. There were problem areas. One location had, one building had a parking operation where the staff was not getting all the money to the bank. So I had to go in and do some secret shopping and testing and see who was not being honest with the money that was coming in and make some changes. Once you just get in the weeds, operationally, and that's I'm a business operator, so you got to get down on the level that your employees are from time to time, mm-hmm. and see what they do and
put yourself in their shoes.
To this day, I 40 years later, if I see a wet spill in the concourse of American Airlines Center, or a piece of trash, or a guest that needs help. Any situation, I don't care. It's my job. I'm asking. Mm-hmm. I've got 1,100 people working for me each event, and I can't not do any job I ask them to do myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I've done every single thing. I mean, I don't. Some of it's really gross, and some of it is working with or addressing guest issues when a guest may be completely unreasonable, mm-hmm. and out of line. Then there is a line that we don't let our guests cross. But for the most part, we know that they're there to have a good time, and they've bought a beer or two, and mm-hmm. and they might get a little bit, sideways, and we've got to deal with it best we can. Just trying to see our operation at American Airlines Center through our employees, how they see it is important to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's very admirable that you actually go and try to get in the environment that your workers are in. And I think that's a really admirable thing to do.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So being actively involved in the International Association of Venue Managers early in your career sounds impressive. How did this involvement contribute to your professional growth and influence your approach to venue management?
Well, once I got to Dallas, met the folks at Reunion Arena who have hired me into the field of stadium and arena management. I quickly was introduced to IAVM, which is our trade association. It's an advocacy organization that brings arena managers, stadium managers, convention center, a big public assembly facility managers together to share best practices, to share resources to lean on each other when we need to lean on each other. It's a big, prolific organization, about 5,000 members all over the world. And a lot of what I learned in the arena business was through this organization, collaborating with my friends and colleagues at other cities. Got to know the managers of arenas in Atlanta and Denver and Chicago, Houston, and you start sharing your successes and some of your failures and how you all dealt with those. It's always been very valuable, and IAVM has brought that group together to be able to have those communications.
So starting your career at the Dallas Reunion Arena must have been quite an experience. What was your initial role there?
Well, my initial role, as I told you, the property management company I worked for provided all types of building services, and at the time, the company I worked for was providing the parking services to Reunion Arena. I moved from Houston to Dallas to help with the parking operation at Reunion Arena, and eventually, once the management team at Reunion Arena saw my efforts in the parking area, they asked me to be assistant manager of the arena itself. They knew I had a background in janitorial and food and beverage and security and so forth. So I was ready for that challenge.
Can you walk us through a typical day as COO and general manager of the AAC?
I don't know if there is a typical day. Every day is it's one of the great things about my job is it's so it's so chaotic and unpredictable. You know, last night we had a Stars game. Tomorrow night we have a Mavs game. Next weekend we've got two Bad Bunny concerts. They all have different challenges. They all have different dynamics. And my job is to hire really good people that are smarter than me, that know what they're doing, and just keep them motivated and keep them, you know, allow them to do their jobs. I have to report to the ownership groups of both the Mavericks and the Stars. those are my bosses. And so I have to do a lot to keep my team out of the politics of the business. We've got fantastic ownership. They really support us well, give us terrific resources. But, you know, they are demanding. And I need to absorb those demands of ownership and then distribute them to our team so that they're not overwhelmed. Really just putting a great team together, trying to keep them happy and motivated best I can, keep them from not working too many hours and too mm-hmm. long, because we have really crazy and long hours in this business. And just make sure that, you know, we're hitting our metrics. We judge ourselves, judge an arena's success through the amount of events it hosts every year. And we are top five building in the country in terms of mm-hmm. the number of events and the amount of business that we do. And then we have customer service metrics. We score ourselves, we shop ourselves, we survey our guests mm-hmm. and make sure that what we call our net promoter score, which is really the bottom line, how we judge ourselves, is higher than other buildings that are comps. And there's a lot that goes into making those two metrics meet our goals. But we've done a pretty good job over the years.
Okay. So how do you handle scheduling and promoting events at the AAC, especially with high-profile headliners, to ensure their success?
What we do is first, we have to program the teams, get their dates established. That's about 100 dates out of the year that we set aside for the teams. And then we work with promoters and agents of shows that are going to be touring to see how we can fit them into our schedule. And all the big acts want to play Dallas. They know we're we sell a lot of tickets, and our marketing team does a great job of promoting events, making sure we sell a lot of tickets. Most of their shows are sold out, and that's what makes acts happy. So acts seek us out and our available dates to bring their tours through. And sometimes we might not get a tour because we've got a basketball game or a hockey game, and that show may go to another city or to another venue. But we pay very close attention to the number of concerts and live entertainment shows we do each year, and we're again a top five building in that category. Mm-hmm. So we're doing pretty well.
Okay, so with the rise of streaming platforms such as ESPN Plus impacting the in-person attendance, how do you anticipate the AAC adapting to ensure continued success and revenue growth in the future?
Well, I think that the streaming of sports is complementary to the live experience. It's a conduit for people to see what's going on at our venues, and you can watch games just about anywhere at any time now, where you couldn't 20 years ago that wasn't available, and then you see a packed arena and you see the energy. I mean, you can't really feel it like mm-hmm. you can live, and it helps promote our live experience. If your team is competitive and your fans have hope, you're going to sell in this market. You're going to sell out. And it doesn't matter if you have a 90-inch TV with the best surround system in the world. It doesn't match the live experience of being there. And I know it's expensive, and, between parking and concessions and tickets, but you don't have to go every night to every game, right. Mm-hmm. It's something that, fortunately, we have 2.5 million guests a year that feel compelled to come and enjoy a live experience. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that slowing down, especially post-pandemic. I mean, folks really mm-hmm. want to go out and be in settings, you know, with other people and enjoy the live experience. And they missed it for that year and a half, 2 years that we were shut down. The streaming is here to stay. It helps our business. It helps exposure for what we do, mm-hmm. and has not diminished the demand for the live experience whatsoever.
So would you say it kind of increased it?
I think it's complementary. It allows you, you know, for instance, if you want to be a fan of a team in another city, I mean, you may not be going to experiences there, but when they come to town here, you may, you know, when the Chicago Bulls, if you're a Bulls fan, you know, come to Dallas, you're going to go see them, and then you can watch the streaming the rest of the time. The streaming is also a part of the business equation for these teams because they sell those streaming rights, and then they make money from the advertisement that goes on with the streaming. So it's a revenue opportunity for those teams that do it as well. So owning a sports team is so expensive, especially if you want to be competitive. You have to spend all, you know, you have to be at or above the salary cap. You have to provide the finest facilities, transportation, hotels available for the, you know, your players and even beyond. Their families have to be taken care of. It's incredibly expensive to be a sports owner, and you know, streaming revenues, the advertising that comes with that is you know, whether it be streaming or cable, your broadcast arrangements are a critical part of that revenue stream.
Right. So, as a sports and entertainment industry leader, what legacy do you hope to leave behind regarding the AAC's impact and your contribution to your community?
Well, I've been very fortunate to be in one market, Dallas, for the last 38 years. And I want to think that I've done a pretty good job of operating the buildings I've been associated with, in that I'm very proud of the fact that a lot of my teammates that work for me have gone on and are now managing their own buildings. I either helped them, or at least I didn't screw it up for them. I'm very proud that a lot of my former employees are doing very well in the business. But I feel like I've been part of the community. You know, American Airlines Center and Reunion Arena before that are icons of the community. They're our primary gathering place for entertainment. And, you know, you'll never forget your first concert. You'll never forget your first sporting event. Where were you? When did you go? And I was there for the last 38 years, either programming the act or managing the building at that time. And those are memorable experiences. That's what we're about, is creating memories for our guests and the folks in our community. And I feel like I've made a difference in Dallas over those years and made it a better place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So moving on to some fun questions that we have for you. If you could invite any living or historical guest to headline an event at the AAC, who would it be and why?
Oh, boy.
It can be, person can be living or, you know, an historical figure.
You know, I've hosted so many. I've hosted, gosh, you name it, Michael Jackson.
Really?
Whoa. Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
I met Frank Sinatra back in the 80s.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Cool. You know, we just recently, I'm just thinking of pop icon, just superstars, Madonna and Jennifer Lopez and you know, you name it. You name the genre. I've been there and hosted those acts. It's hard for me to pick one. It really is. I don't know if it would be the same today. My answer would be the same today as it would be tomorrow. I like, there are some acts that really appreciate what they do. Some are doing it for the money. The ones that would do it for nothing are the ones I really like. And I'm not going to name names, but I let me think about that a little bit. Maybe we can come back to it if we have time.
Come back to it.
Can I ask, like, you said you met Frank Sinatra in person?
Yes.
What was he like?
Well, it was very abrupt. He back in the 80s, gosh, I don't know if I want to go down this path, but I will. smoking was like you smoked, you smoked in the arena. You smoked in the back, mm-hmm. Hallways. And we knew he liked to smoke cigarettes because he asked for, in his production rider, a carton of Marlboro Reds and a bottle of Jack Black whiskey. And I happened to be in the hallway when he was walking to the stage, and I was smoking a cigarette, and he walked over to me and asked if he could borrow a cigarette, and I lit a cigarette. We shared a few words. I don't remember what we talked about, but he took a couple puffs and stamped out the cigarette on the floor and went on the stage. So that was my big Frank Sinatra encounter. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have a conversation with Michael Jackson? You said you hosted him.
Michael was very protected.
Makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Most of the acts. I never went out of my way to meet an act unless they needed something. They wanted to meet me. Mm-hmm. You stay out of the way. And they're not. Those performers are focused on their guests and their fans, and don't need to have people bothering them and wanting to meet them and take pictures with them and all that. I've had a lot of those opportunities, I've met a lot of cool people that was just part of the process that they wanted to engage in. The list is just name an act and I've probably met them, had a picture with them, and over the years, it's been a really cool job.
So you had many great events throughout, like Michael Jackson and many great other concerts and stuff. But if you can attend any sporting event or concert without any professional obligations, which one would it be and why?
Texas A&M football.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, season ticket holder there, and that's my escape. Mm-hmm. Been a season ticket holder for a long, long time, and I can be a fan. It's not. I can't see an event in my building. I could not sit and watch. Because I'm going to be watching security or housekeeping or there's a pixel out on the scoreboard or. Mm-hmm. Or the sound system's not working right, or I'm going to be worried about something going on. If my wife and I want to go see a show, we can't see it at American Airlines Center. Mm-hmm. We'll typically have to go to another city to see a show that we want to see, just because I have to get away from my environment. I'm too too wrapped up in it. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M football is my go-to for sporting events anyway.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we've come to the end of our final show for this school year, and we want to express our deepest gratitude to Mr. Dave Brown for generously taking the time out of his busy schedule to join us. Your presence and insights have truly elevated this episode, making it one of the year's most memorable moments. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for making this meeting possible and sharing your expertise with us today. We extend our heartfelt appreciation to our listeners for support throughout the school year. Stay connected with us on all our social media platforms below and catch up on any episodes you may have missed during the summer break. Stay tuned for more captivating content from KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview. And until September, take care and goodbye.
Stay awesome.
Thank you for listening to KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview.
My radio station.
We hope you enjoyed the great content and great discussion, all from a student's perspective. Make sure to follow us on Twitter for the latest updates at KSBM_TVT or on Facebook at KSBM Radio.
Add them on Facebook.
Check them on Facebook.
Take care.